Hello everybody, and welcome back to Information Systems, this introductory course. You are almost done. We're in Module 10 already, in Week 10. And we're going to be talking about how we actually develop information systems and what goes on behind the scenes to get these technologies in our hands, in our pockets, in our desktop, and ready to use. So first, I would like to start off with a prayer, if you'll join me. Dear Heavenly Father, I'd like to thank you for each and every student who's come here to learn, and I hope that they have that every student has their mind wide open, their heart wide open. They're able to just understand what we're learning and be able to really apply it for the betterment of their families, of their workplaces, and just to serve you better. So in your heavenly name we pray. Amen. We're going to jump right into the Week 10 IS development, and we're going to go ahead and talk about those learning objectives. Now that we've fully covered the components of an information system, we're going to talk about actually making them and creating them. So upon successful completion today, hopefully you're going to be able to explain the overall process of how you develop a new software application. We're going to explain the differences between software development and methodologies. There's different approaches you can take for developing software. We're going to talk about some of those differences. We're going to be able to explain the differences between the different programming languages used to develop software, and understand some of the issues surrounding development websites and mobile applications, some of the challenges that exist. And then finally, we're going to identify the four primary implementation policies. So, programming. Programming is needed. There we go. I'm going to put myself in that corner right there. Programming is needed to take ideas or business solutions and bring them to reality. So if it's something that you're imagining, if something that you wish you could do with your technology, with your hardware and software, programming is going to be needed to have those tasks executed. Small changes can be implemented in a short time frame with a streamlined process. And then larger changes are going to require a software development methodology. And those are going to guide and manage the process. And then we're going to talk about agile, we're going to talk about lean methodologies, and those ways that we can have a development in a really logical, patterned way where it's comprehensive and it's consistent. So the systems development life cycle, this SDLC, you're going to see this in the book and in our slides in this way, SDLC. Developed in the 1960s to manage large software development projects, still in wide use today. It's called waterfall methodology. It's very structured. Each phase has an end deliverable that you need to turn in before you go on to the next phase, and every phase has to be completed before the next one can start. It's in this waterfall methodology. And then the phases are written here. I'm not going to go over each one of them with you in this waterfall methodology of from preliminary analysis all the way through maintenance. But if you would like, this is in your textbook and in your supplemental readings that you can go through and look at each one of these methodologies and the phases involved. And here they are. next one is this rapid application development, RAD. This is going to focus on quickly building a working model, getting feedback from users as it's going, and then we're updating the working model in real time. This is best for smaller projects. It gives users the availability to give feedback. So in real time, you're asking those users, how's it going? What do you need? What could be better? So the overall requirements are defined. The team is formed. We're deciding how feasible it is, and then we go right around the phases here. And again, I'm not going to go through each individual phase, but if this is something that appeals to you in terms of developing an information system and software development, this would be a place to start if you are interested in either the waterfall approach or the rapid application development, the RAD. Now we're getting into the agile methodologies, and this is a more current method. I am personally a certified Scrum Master. So Scrum uses these agile methodologies for an iterative approach. And so what you're going to notice here for agile is that it's going to be small teams, they're cross-functional, and it's done in some very small increments. So it's daily status meetings that you're going to hold, short little sprints or time frame increments for each change. And then a working project is completed at the end of each iteration. Each little version that you do, you're going to demonstrate it to your stakeholders and seek their feedback. So that's part of those agile methodologies, which is when we're talking about, for instance, like a mobile application that's being built, more than likely it's going to be some part of this agile or some combined method that will include some strong leaning on the agile methodology. Next, we're going to talk about the lean methodology. This is the last one we're going to talk about. So this takes an initial idea, and we develop a minimal viable product. So this MVP, this works best in an entrepreneurial environment. So we're going to, we can start anywhere in the cycle, but if we're building, then we're going to write some code, then we're going to measure. Then we're going to measure the data, we're going to learn what happens. Once we learn what happens, we're going to get ideas and start building again. And the cycle just keeps repeating itself for that lean methodology. And so for this one, it's going to be that just-in-time module or just-in-time methodology, where it's when we're talking about lean, it's going to be just ultimate efficiency with resources, whether those are human resources, financial resources. You'll notice on here that there isn't coding that happens until that measurement and the learning takes place. So that is the lean methodology. And again, if you have an interest, by all means, there's more about each one of these software development methodologies in the supplemental readings. So as you're moving through the feedback in this one, it's really important to get, the feedback is going to be given in two different forms: direct observation and discussion with the users, so of asking them how it's going, and then also usage statistics gathered from the software itself. So people can say they love it, but if the statistics show they're not really using it, that's going to be, a better glimpse into the real picture of what's happening. Usually requires several iterations as the team uses feedback to decide, to make good choices. That's why we do small little sprints. And then the team's going to decide whether to continue in the same direction or maybe pivot in the direction of a new minimal viable product. All right. You'll notice in this course, we've talked a lot about different kinds of triangles. This one is our quality triangle for software developments. And so we have quality, time, and cost. And so, on this quality triangle, so decisions are made during development that affects all three factors. But only two of these factors can really be addressed that require compromise or trade-offs, because you can't compromise all three points of the triangle. So you can pick two and make changes and compromise without choosing the three. So if we start on the left there at quality, you're asking yourself, for each one of those iterations of the software, does it meet the requirements or doesn't it? Is the quality there? Are there minimal bugs, no bugs? How's it working? We go up to the top of the triangle for time. Do we need to spend more time or do we need to spend less time on this project? Are we on our time budget? And then going down to the right, we're looking at our financial budget. Do we need to spend more money or spend less money on this project? So there needs to be a balance among the three points of the triangle here: quality, time and cost when we have a software development, again, focusing on two at the most, that you can really make some good compromises. Programming languages. If you are familiar with programming languages, you will know that there are quite a few, and that this is an area where you don't need to necessarily have a formal degree, formal education, to be able to make a very big impact in the field if you do have the skill set of knowing a programming language. They're used, if you're going to develop a new system, you would use these languages, and typically there's multiple generations of a language. So looking here at the arrows, that first generation, that would be something like machine coding, those zeros and ones that we were talking about, that binary on and off switches, it's machine dependent. As we move on to the second arrow, the second generation, is going to be more of an assembly language. Some English-like phrases, it is still machine-dependent. Into the third generation, similar to a spoken language, so we're really noticing some evolution and some maturity in the coding language. It's still machine-dependent. This is going to be more of like your JavaScript. And then in the fourth generation here, faster development. It uses developer environments that help generate the code. So when the developers are more involved in setting the code, it is machine independent at this point in the fourth generation. And the examples of this one would be SQL that we talked about, that SQL search language, SQL, and SPSS, if you're familiar with that. So that's going to be that more of the fourth generation machine independent programming languages. All right. So when we are talking about software development decisions, it depends how big your organization is, and it depends what your goals are. But every new development project should decide whether to create it themselves using in-house personnel or whether to buy one that has already been developed. So here's some, if we're going to purchase one that has already been developed for us, there are some advantages and disadvantages, and here they are. We see that it is less expensive to do it this way. It's more quickly available. It's already been built. It's already been tested. The bugs have been worked out. It already exists on the market. The disadvantages of purchasing software rather than building it in-house would be that the same software might be used exactly by your competitors. So if you did have that competitive advantage of having the narrow focus that we talked about, or your uniqueness, that might be really compromised here of purchasing instead of creating. And then there's not really customizations that can be done if you're already purchasing a product that exists in the marketplace. If you build that software yourself and you use your in-house developers to do that for you, it's going to be completely customized to your needs, so that's definitely an advantage. It's not going to be used by your competitors. It's going to be proprietary to you and to your organization. So it's going to help you keep that competitive advantage and the competitive edge. Disadvantages, of course, is that it is more expensive. It's not going to be available quickly. You're going to have to wait for a complete development schedule and testing, and the bugs are going to have to get worked out, and it's not going to be that ready-to-go, off-the-shelf solution. End user computing. So this is one of those steps right before testing, which we're going to be talking about next, that others, people who aren't in IT, develop their own solutions that aren't trained in programming or software development. This means that there are programs that exist for, let's say you are not, you don't have coding experience, you're not an IT professional, but you still have opportunities here with this end user computing to go into a program that kind of has some guide rails on it. Even though you don't speak a programming language and you're not familiar, you're still able to make some of these developments in information systems. So advantages of doing this, development is closer to those that are actually going to use them. The end users have more input into the development of the information systems and the software. And another advantage is that you may receive it sooner than if you were to go through IT channels from the IT professionals that might have a very full workload doing these iterative designs that we talked about. Disadvantages, of course, several applications may perform the same functions. It's a little more clunky. It's not as if you were going to design it yourself, it would be much more customized. It's probably not going to be tested and bug-free. It's going to be something that is a little more cumbersome. And it's not always backed up the way it would be if it went through a formal design process with a professional designer. But it's an option. Testing. This is going to be a critical part of any development. We're going to test it out. We're going to check for bugs, fix them before the system is implemented, before it gets rolled out. I currently work for a mobile application, and we have been live in the App Store for about a year and live in the Google, the Android market for about 9 months. And we are still all the time working out bugs, being able to go through the software and find problems that we can fix before it goes to a much wider audience. So we look at the different tests available, the unit test, the system test, and the user acceptance test. So again, of course, as you drill down, the unit test is done by the programmers who make it for their modules alone. It's kind of a hard way to test it, though, because that's, you know, if you made it, you understand it. And so a better test would be when we drill down to the system test. This is done once the individual units are bug-free. It's integrated with other bug-free models, and now we test it as a whole. So it's not just one programmer testing the thing they made. Now it's as a whole, we're going to test the whole thing together. And then the user acceptance test is going to be the most rigorous of the three, because that's the actual end users are putting it to the test, and we're checking usability, we're checking functionality, bugs, errors, problems. It's going to get tested and retested, there we go, until we get it right. So that's the testing phase of software design. So let's say we have this product, we've tested it, the bugs are shaken out. How are we going to implement? How are we going to implement is the question of what we've made. So there's several implementation methodologies that exist, and here's a list of them. The first one being this direct cutover that you can see. This is going to be a new system is turned on, the old system is turned off. It's exactly how it sounds, a direct cutover. It's the riskiest, but it's the least expensive. Because the reason it's the least expensive is that you don't need to support two systems at the same time. You're just cold turkey, turning one off, turning the other one on. And the reason it's risky, of course, is that if there are any problems, you don't have that legacy system in place to fall back upon. You are committed to the new methodology. The next one on the list here you see is the pilot implementation. And this is a small group is going to use the new system first. It's going to have a smaller impact on the organization if something goes wrong, and you still have the old system running, just in case. So if the pilot group does decide, listen, this just wasn't ready yet, we're still working out too many bugs, you still have the other one in place for the vast majority of your enterprise or your organization, and it's just that pilot group that is going to be affected. Now, it certainly has pros and cons, and the fact that it's going to take a lot longer to roll out something in a pilot model than it would be to just directly cut over. Parallel operation is the third way that we're going to be able to implement this new methodology, and that's going to be all transactions are entered into the new system and the old system simultaneously. It's very expensive to maintain two systems. So you wouldn't want to do this parallel operation for very long, but it's the least risky. So depending on what type of computing you're doing, how sensitive the information is, if you're prone to, you know, how catastrophic would it be if you lost all this transaction data, this might be what your organization would really need if it's very risk averse or if it needs this type of security. You can identify the bugs and still go back to the old system if you need to, without really risk, like you would in some of the first two. And then finally, we have our phased implementation. And this is our new functions are implemented as parts of the old functions are turned off. So this is kind of even those people in your organization who are really dragging their feet and they don't want to do the new methodology, eventually they're not going to have a choice because the old things are going to be in phases, turned off, and you're kind of forced to use the new one until eventually you have slowly moved completely from the old system to the new system. I'm sure in your workplaces you have experienced one or more of these implementation methodologies as companies have rolled out new forms of technology to you. I think I have experienced every one of them. I would say my favorite is probably that pilot implementation group, kind of letting a few go first, see how it goes. You still have a bit more speed, but a lot less risk. So I think that is kind of my style in terms of implementation, but certainly pros and cons for all four methodologies. All right, so how do we support when we're implementing methodologies? We don't just say, okay, guys, here's the new system, figure it out, and go. Of course not. Every implementation requires support in two key areas, and here they are here on your screen. We have change management and maintenance. So look at the change management one. That's going to be all proposed changes should be communicated to all affected personnel, including IT. And IT should be managing which code has been tested and signed off by the end users prior to implementation. So IT really takes the reins on this one and makes sure that testing is happening the way it should and that they are managing all parts of that changeover from the legacy system to the new system. The next area where your employees are going to need support is in maintenance. And often newly implemented systems still need changes for fixing bugs. And management needs to ensure that the system continues to run and is aligned with the business priorities and is still working well in the day-to-day, even though we have, you know, our new systems in place. So we have made it to our summary here. Hopefully, as we've gone through the different ways that we can actually build a system, we talked about the coding language, explaining that the overall process of developing a new software application, you can kind of talk to that process, the differences between software development methodologies, and then the programming languages that are used to actually develop that software, and then in some cases, like we talked about, not even having to know a programming language and still being able to develop software. And then finally, understanding some of those issues surrounding the development of websites and mobile applications and how we're actually going to implement them once it is created. So we are coming back next week for our globalization and the digital divide and kind of what that means regionally when we are, you know, so connected and what it means globally to be so connected. We're going to talk through the pros and cons of that. And this digital divide that you may have been hearing about that is, for some people, will tell you it is shrinking. Others will tell you it is growing rapidly. And we're going to look at the arguments on both sides of that for the digital divide. So I am really looking forward to seeing you soon. Thank you so much for your continued hard work and your just open mind to learn these new things. And I will see you very soon. Thank you.